Welcome back to The Enemies List. I'm Rick Wilson. Today we're joined by George Conway, where we will talk about Donald Trump's psychology, his legal jeopardy, and his campaign, which is now almost inevitable in 2024.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody.
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified.
It's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List. Hey, folks, welcome to the second episode of The Enemies List. And today joining me is my special guest and good friend, George Conway. I'm delighted you accepted and glad to have you with me as always.
Does that mean I'm at the top of the list?
No. You're at somebody's enemies list. You're very close to the top. But on this show, we're going to try to identify the enemies of democracy and the old-fashioned American way of life thing and give them what for.
And this is a 20-minute podcast or an hour? It's going to take months.
Well, look, this is the second episode, man. Sadly or happily, we've got a long road to go. But welcome to the podcast as always. And you know, America knows you as one of the people who is one of the greatest anthropologists of Donald Trump's brain out there. And I'm curious.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
No, believe me, we both, I think, live a little too much in Donald Trump's head.
I think you're as much of an anthropologist of that particular mass of jelly as anyone else.
I probably am. It's probably why I don't sleep much. Yeah. But so listen, I had a couple of thoughts that I wanted to run by you today and get your take on a few things. So the elections are coming up and two big things are going on right now. First, you know, all the signs out of Mar-a-Lago are that Trump is preparing himself for a big reveal on either election night or very shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. And so on the first level, I wanted to ask you.
Not going to be a pole dance.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. You know, unless this new lawyer has really got some moves we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what your thoughts are and where do you think his head is at right now on, is he running again because he wants to go back to the power, the grift, the scam, or is he going to run again because he thinks he can avoid prosecution?
All of the above. Mm. I think he runs again because he wouldn't be able to bear seeing somebody else take the limelight away from him, such as some other guy in Florida, for example, or some guy who should be hung in his view. Mm-hmm. He certainly would, you know, that would compel him. He wants to be in control. He knows that if he is not the nominee or he makes clear that he is not running, he gets no attention anymore. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is he always viewed the presidency as a security blanket against legal liability, including criminal liability. New York Times, I mean, Maggie Haberman reported that multiple times. Mm-hmm. And I would recall one of the first times I ever had a conversation with him was on his 757 on the way down to a pre-inaugural event. And he asked me, should I keep Preet Bharara as the U.S. attorney in New York? And I thought, well, you know, I guess you should appoint your own people wherever you can. But it didn't occur to me then. What I'm sure of now was he was thinking about his own skin there. That's just, he's always thinking about himself. He's not thinking about anybody else. It wasn't a matter of, you know, prosecutorial policy and setting priorities at the Department of Justice. I mean, it never is. So,
right. I mean, I think it's interesting to me. I want to get your thoughts on this. There is this sense right now inside the emergent Republican majority in the House that they're going to try to go after DOJ to do Trump's bidding. They're going to go after Chris Wray. They're going to go after Merrick Garland. They're going to go after the National Security Division. They're going to try to do the sort of Benghazi-style investigations against them in order to prevent them from really pushing forward on Trump. How effective do you think that strategy is going to be against this Department of Justice?
I don't look, I think if the if Merrick Garland makes the decision to prosecute on any number of these issues, principally, I think right now the one to look at is the document, stolen document mm-hmm. scandal. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to make a difference at all. I think if anything, it's going to make them more determined. I don't think that they're going to. I mean, the Trump administration showed how you can basically stonewall an investigation by Congress, and I think they can issue all the subpoenas they want, but the executive branch in this case with a legitimate interest in prosecuting a bad person who's done bad things can basically refuse to produce information about its investigation and its prosecution while it's ongoing. I don't think there's going to be I don't think they're going to have a way to enforce. They can, you know, they're going to create a circus. That's what they will do. Right. A circus that they can talk about on Fox News all they want. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that has the potential for, you know, a destructive effect because of its effect on certain people who watch that. But I don't think it's going to make the prosecutors more determined. And frankly, I don't think any judge is going to like it.
So, George, give us a sort of, you know, you follow this very, very closely. Give us a 30,000-foot overview of where you think the prosecution of Trump or the potential prosecution of Trump stands today. Because it seems to everyone on the outside, especially to us non-attorneys, that he keeps wrapping himself tighter and tighter in more and more problems.
Yeah.
In how he's handling this.
Yeah, I mean, he's been playing a kind of Russian roulette with the law for a long time now. And, you know, sooner or later, something's going to come back and blow up on him. And I think the one that's going to do that first, let's leave aside the Georgia prosecution, I'm talking from the federal prosecution standpoint, is this document scandal, because it is very simple. It is not like the January 6th case. I mean, the January 6th case, the difficulty, you know, originally people conceived of it as, did he criminally incite violence that day? And that's a hard burden to show, because the First Amendment allows a lot of rhetoric that, mm-hmm. you know, could incite people. But, you know, people talk about all sorts of, you know, metaphors every day that use all those sorts of metaphors that, you know, don't necessarily incite violence.
Yes.
And the difference is, of course, he actually was doing it, but he was actually doing it and successful in inciting violence, and he intended to incite violence, but proving that beyond a reasonable doubt is going to be difficult unless you have direct communications, I think, between Trump or through Roger Stone with, you know, some of the Proud Boys or some of the people, the insurrectionists directly. I don't think that's a fruitful line of investigation. I do think an effort to prosecute him for inciting violence would be difficult, but I think it's pretty clear that a decent case can be made, a very good case can be made, in fact, about his violating 18 U.S.C. 371, which prohibits conspiracies to defraud the United States, and 18 U.S.C. 1512 C and K, which prohibit attempts to interfere with official proceedings, the official proceeding there being the January 6th count mm-hmm. of electoral votes before Congress. And I mean, basically what you have to show is the intent to use deceit in the conspiracy to fraud charge. You have to show an intent to use deceit into basically perverting a function of government, and that's what they were doing through the fake electors and through the lies that he told, and then the obstruction, the same thing. It's corrupt to lie and corrupt to fake electoral votes and corrupt to try to get the vice president to violate his constitutional and legal duties, among other things. I mean, there are a number of threads there, and then the violence can be used. His attempt to you know, his lies, the fact that he was told repeatedly that he lost, the fact that he actually admitted to people like Alyssa Farah and Hope Hicks and to, I think, my wife, that basically he lost. He says, how could I lose to this fucking guy? I think a number of people could end up testifying to that. And, you know, that altogether is a fairly decent, it should be a pretty decent case under those two statutes. Now, it's complicated, though, because there were a lot of things going on, a lot of people involved it's a complicated case. So it's like, that's why I focus a lot on the documents case. It's a lot simpler. The metaphor I've been using is you're the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, and you're going after the five families, and you want to bring this big RICO case and gets everybody in along with the capo di capi. How do you say that?
Capo di tutti capi.
Capo di tutti capi. Okay, you're very good at that. And, you know, it just takes a while. It's a lot of work. Whereas the documents case, the Mar-a-Lago documents case is like, okay, you're the U.S. attorney and you've got this RICO case on the side. It's going to take a couple of years or 3 years or whatever. And the FBI is working on it. You've got 30 people working on it. And the NYPD calls you and says, hey, we just got this. We just busted these guys who were loading jewelry onto a truck at Kennedy Airport. And the big guy was there. He was driving the truck. It's like, right, you know, right. that case is, you could put that case on in a day. Okay? Right. You just put the cop on and say something. And that's kind of like, that's the metaphor I use for the document. He stole the documents. He sure. went through them. The evidence appears to be that he went through them himself. He tried to get his lawyers to lie. He did get his lawyers to lie. Mm-hmm. And he jerked around the archives for a year and a half. He defied a subpoena by refusing to produce the documents in response to a valid subpoena, and then making a representation through his counsel that all the documents have been produced. I mean, he has done everything possible to aggravate this. And, you know, if he had given the documents back in early, you know, sometime last year when the archives had first started asking for him, he'd probably have gotten a pass. But he just dug himself deeper and deeper a hole. And if any one more thing comes out, I think it's going to be difficult for the Justice Department to pass on a prosecution as it is. But if any additional evidence comes out that there are still more documents, either at Mar-a-Lago or Bedminster or Trump Tower.
The trunk of Jared's car.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Ivana's grave. I don't know. You know, if anything more, it's like they just have to. I think they do have to, but it's just we just push them so far over the top that they would really have no choice. They could. Merrick Garland would not be able to face the public and say that, you know, he's pursuing equal justice under law if he doesn't bring the cases. Because if you or I had done this, if a chairman of the Joint Chiefs 100%. Had done this, like if a national security advisor or the CIA director had done this, we'd already be in the slammer.
Okay? I've said this a lot. When I worked for Dick Cheney when he was Secretary of Defense as a very junior guy, I was a junior nobody. But if I had taken a top secret document, my last
did you have more hair than he did then?
I did have more hair than he did then. I still had hair at that time.
Okay.
Folks, I had glowing golden locks until 2015, and Trump, and just the stress just killed me.
Everything Trump touches dies.
Right, including my hairline. Now, but if I had walked out of the building on my last day with a box of top secret documents that 5 minutes before I had access to, but then the moment I walk out the door, I take them with me, I would still be in jail.
Right. You absolutely would. You would have gotten a knock on the door from the FBI, you know, the next morning and at 6 a.m., you know, and nobody would have heard from you since. And you would have pled guilty.
You know, one thing I was curious about, George, he's gone through lawyers. I mean, obviously not paying them is a big factor, but he's gone through so many attorneys. And now there almost feels like now he is like pulling people out from behind the bus station.
Yeah,
to represent him. I mean, and the latest one where he's posing with pictures of her on his plane. I mean, that one that seems like it's got more than just legal overhang to it, right?
I missed that picture.
He had a very sort of regal pose with her sitting on the 757.
Which one, Alina?
Alana Habib.
Habib.
But I mean, I feel like he's going to go through. A lot
Look,
more.
She has a she. I mean, she has a very sophisticated and experienced practice defending parking garages. I don't know what your problem is.
Obviously, and if these documents had been hidden in a parking garage and they were about parking garages, and Trump was a parking garage magnate, you know, she might be exactly the person you wanted.
Absolutely. I mean, it's sort of similar. I mean, a car technically is a when you park it, it's like and you give it to a valet. It's called a legal bailment. They get to hold on to the car for a while. So maybe she's going to use bailment law to say that he was just holding on to these documents.
I will be surprised by nothing in the legal gymnastics that are to come. So George, one of the things that I've been keeping a very close eye on in the slow motion return of Trump to the public stage. As we see all these signs and portents out of Mar-a-Lago, you know, it's circled like crows circling in the sky, smoke from the chimneys, some days black, some days white, all the things that are presaging a Trump return. One of the things that we're hearing from a lot of people is that Elon Musk is closing his Twitter deal and that Donald will be back on the on the Twitter machine within hours after that. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think he's still got the juice? And are you looking forward to it or dreading it?
I hate to say it, but I'm kind of looking forward to it. Because I think it just gives him, it's just, he's so off his rocker. And he's gotten worse if you've been following Truth
Those
Circle.
Truth things, he's like, woo!
He's just, I just think he's, and he incriminates himself when he makes statements. It's like, I just think he's just going to bury himself. I don't think it's really going to help him. And I think at this point, knock on wood, I think there are enough knives out in the Republican Party that he's going to end up, I think there's going to be a big fight between now and 2024 within the Republican Party, because I think people sense weakness, the people who have not yet shown courage. Even Mike Pence referring to the fact that I might prefer someone else to be the nominee.
Right. That was the most passive aggressive Mike. And Mike Pence is like the king of passive aggressive.
Oh my gosh. It's like, that was like, whoa, those are violent words. For Mike Pence to say that.
Right. That's like somebody taking a baseball bat to you. if you're Mike Pence.
And DeSantis does not. He appears to want to play. Even the lackiest of the lackeys, Mike Pompeo, is gearing up.
There's
sharks and there's blood in the water, and they're counting on. I mean, they're counting on Merrick Garland in part, which is interesting. The same way that when you remember the February 13, 2021 speech that. Mitch McConnell gave on the floor of the Senate. He's saying we do have a criminal law in this country. It's like, please indict this guy. All these people want to see him go to jail. It's the funniest thing. I mean, they may actually want him to go to jail more than you and I do,
which I find ironic. But yes. I think you're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
Because look. Like the other night, I watched Ron DeSantis debate Charlie Crist, who is, kind of a worn out figure. And DeSantis was brought in like maybe a C+, some places C- minus performance. Donald Trump watching that, you got to think, I can take this guy. Yeah. But can he take the whole dog pack is the question.
Yeah.
Did it in 2015.
The only way somebody beats Trump is. I mean, first of all, there has to be more on the legal front, I think. Trump has to get crazier and crazier, which I think is a reasonable supposition. And I think there has to be a united opposition. There has to be really one opponent, which I don't really see happening. Yeah. It could happen. If it was just maybe one-on-one DeSantis against Trump, there might be a chance. But you got to go hammer and tong at him. You've got to go hammer. DeSantis would need you to help him with his campaign and to trigger the guy and to make him and basically just. I mean, hey, yeah, where's the wall? You got to do a little differently than say the Lincoln Project has done it. You'd have to say, hey, where's the wall? Okay.
Right. Go at him from the right.
Right. Go at him from the right. And then also really point out to people how much money he grifted from them, saying that he was dealing, he was trying to remedy a fake election when in fact it's just going to his lawyers and going to, expensive consultants and whatnot.
That was an ad I did earlier this year.
Yeah.
Where we said, you know, the suckers here are all you moms. No,
I want to see you. I'd like to see you hired by DeSantis.
I think that's a pretty low probability.
I agree. It's a low probability, but maybe, you know, we can. We can put
all
a,
hands
put a
to
disguise,
the oars when it comes to
disguise you or something, put your golden golden locks back on and right. call you, oh, we have this consultant named Ricardo Wilson, and he's excellent.
Ricardo Williams.
Ricardo Williams, yes.
He's from with his golden, Argentina.
He's from Argentina with his golden locks, and he cuts these amazing ads. And so,
well, I think, you know, one of the things that may end up saving Trump in the 2024 primary is you do have all these people who want to play.
Yeah. And that's the problem. And it's the 2016 problem.
Yeah.
It's the 2016.
Peanut butter too thin. So he's he holds 15%. So, he's got an advantage.
I mean, you know, from a pro democracy standpoint, there's bad news and good news. The bad news is he's probably going to get the nomination if he runs and he seeks it. Mm-hmm. Even if he's running, you know, while under indictment or at, you know, sitting in the dock in a courtroom,
sure,
he's just going to try to use that to inflame his base. I think it's going to alienate the Senate. So that's the good news. But the good news is going to be that it's going to embolden the Republicans who say, "Look, he's just pushing us over the cliff. He's bringing us over the cliff." The problem is you don't need 50% to win. Nope. The Republican nomination, you know, they changed the rules to, you know, because of
Newt. Listen, you hold it, let's right? just say, look, game it out, man. Yep. He goes into Iowa,
yep.
New Hampshire, South Carolina, right. and he's got 20% of the vote already in the bag.
Right. So he gets 10 or 15% more. And by March, it's winner take all, whether or not you have a majority or not. All right. They probably made I'm not an expert on the RNC rules, but they probably made the rules even more pro.
Pro front runner
in 2020. Because they were trying to make sure that nobody else could possibly get traction. So, you know, the Republican Party has really put itself into a bind. But you know, it could be a very, very nasty division thing. And I think there's some truth into I think there's truth in what Liz Cheney has been saying. That if he gets the nomination, it's going to be the end of the Republican Party. It's going to splinter.
Yeah, it's look, I mean,
and I think that's what has to happen. I think that's what has to happen. I think historically,
oh, I agree.
There is no redemption, no saving the current Republican Party. It is rotten to the core. It is basically grift. It's controlled by grift and lies and disinformation and people, and it's driven people who would, you know, honest people out of the party, and it's sure. basically rewarded the most dishonest. And encourage some people who I thought were not horrible to be horrible. And so I think that, you know, I think this is one of those moments where the best hope would be something like, you know, in the early 1800s or, you know,
the Whig Party.
Yeah, the Whig Party. There are parties that sometimes there are collapses. And, the system equilibrates with two parties because of the single member districts, and I'm not a political scientist, but single member districts at first past the post. That means you really can only have two viable political parties at a time, but that doesn't mean one of them can't crack up and you might have a kind of a period in between where there's a little disorder. And I think
look, the Whig Party and people, conservatives who are anti-Trump have this sort of sense of despair, like there's nowhere for us to go. But here, it's important to remember the Whig Party in 1854, when it died, 4 years later, the Republican Party had replaced it.
Yes.
And Abraham Lincoln,
Abraham Lincoln was
elected president.
It didn't work out all of our problems, but
tough to see that now.
Right.
But I genuinely think that the Democratic Party has a progressive slash mainstream schism. The Republican Party has a very, very large MAGA schism and a very small principled conservative schism. But these things are often more consequential and faster than people anticipate. And I think there's something, and he's a catalyzing force in these things that always makes people completely crazy. And it may end up being that, you know, at some point Republicans get exhausted.
Yeah, I think they are. I think there is an exhaustion already. I think you see it by the smaller crowds. I think, you know, I think people, it's the same. It's boring. It's not interesting anymore. It's not Fox News. The problem with from Fox News is like, I mean, playing Trump over and over again, saying the same things he was saying a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I mean, they need something new to keep the ratings up.
Somebody the other day said, you know, Trump in 2016 was like Elvis, you know, in the 50s, and then he was Fat Elvis in 2020.
Yeah, no, there was like a novelty aspect. There was a novelty aspect of it that drew people. There's no question about it. And you know, I said in there was this documentary that I participated in called Unfit on Trump's mental state, and one of the things I said was, you know, Donald Trump was a practical joke that got out of hand. And that's basically what happened. It's like he was interesting. He, you know, it was fun to provoke the libs, but it turned out the libs were right about him. Well, they weren't even half right about him. They were just, you know, he was much worse than they ever said he was. And nothing normal ever happened. He never normalized himself, which, you know, and to the credit of the people who saw it faster than I did, they were right.
Well, I think that, yeah, the current version of Donald Trump is the Elvis imitator in Branson.
Yes.
And it is not as exciting. I think it is still, again, it still may be more than sufficient to win the primary for president in 2020.
I mean, because, you know, there's still going to be 20 or 25% of people who are just going to do it to give the finger to the rest of the world. And then they're going to buy into the tune he's going to play of victim being the victim with all these prosecutions, even though he's guilty of sin.
So, George, if a candidate came out to you and said, I know you're an attorney, not a campaign consultant, but what would you recommend to me is the best way to rattle Trump's cage? Well, how would you fuck with Trump in this presidential campaign of 2020?
I would have Rick Wilson making ads that basically go after him. And, you know, I mean, those ads that you cut when you have that woman with the voice saying, Donald.
I may have her on the show anonymously.
Donald, we know you did it. Everyone knows you did it. Guilty, guilty, guilty. You know, that gets in his head. And it makes him do stupid things. It's going to, you know, with Twitter, it would be enhanced. I mean, you know, I just think, I mean, I was saying this in 2019 and 2020.
Sure.
You know, the Democrats needed to hire basically get a bunch of psychiatric and psychological consultants and have them work with ad makers and just do stuff to make them crazy.
I mean, folks don't know this, but really one of the origin stories of the Lincoln Project was George and I had lunch in New York one day and we started talking about ads and it just like all clicked together.
Yeah, you know, I made the point that, hey, you could run these ads and, you know, this is like, you know, I don't know your business the way you do, but I mean, one of the things I learned in 2016 is that because Brad Parscale screwed up, actually, it's another story. He screwed up and he bought ad time in the District of Columbia, which makes absolutely no sense, thinking because somebody thought, hey, you know, well, you'll get this in Northern Virginia. No. And so you can just buy, you know, you can just almost micro target, which is an internet term. And you could just like, hey, just find. And I said to you at that lunch, let's just, hey, who's the cable provider at the White House? Just run the ads in there. I mean, and it was, you know, and then next thing you know, you're running $5,000 a night. It's crazy. Crazy. And, you know, the rest is history.
Well, we all hoped that we would have an end to this Trump story.
I know. It's
at the end of 2020, God, we live in the hands of a cruel and angry God. So we're going to have to keep marching down this trail a little longer, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, George, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun. We didn't get to do our Trump impressions, which yours is better than mine.
But next time, folks, we'll do the whole thing in character. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, George.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
So heading up the enemies list today is Kanye. Kanye, I don't care what name he's called this week. We have now reached a point where anti-Semitism has been so mainstreamed in American culture that a guy who was a cultural icon, was a giant in American music, has now been reduced to someone whose obvious mental incapacities have led him to start ranting about the conspiracies of the Jews. And this is some crazy, like, Protocols of the Elders of Zion shit. This is way over the top. Now, Kanye is, you know, obviously an anti-Semite. He has expressed it clearly. I'm going to take him at his word for what he believes. But the fact is, there are a lot of people in this country that have empowered Kanye and people like him. One of them was Adidas, who until last week was one of Kanye's biggest sponsors. They finally dropped him after having to have their heads kicked in for days on end and have to have stock price crash for days on end until they got rid of him. There needs to be something in the business culture of this country where you realize you've crossed a moral red line. The other companies that have dropped Kanye, including Balenciaga, have done the right thing. I think they were the first, so God bless them. If you're going to have somebody who is a raging anti-Semite sponsoring your brand or involved with your brand, it's on you. But there's one more element into this story. So Kanye had become this symbol of MAGA, of Republicanism, of defiance. And you had the House Judiciary Committee tweet out a few days ago, Elon Kanye Trump. You had Fox News with, you know, Tucker Carlson's White Power Hour have Kanye on, and they did a very carefully edited interview with Kanye. Even that interview was crazy. But what they cut out of the interview was Kanye's raging anti-Semitic remarks. Now, I'm sorry. If you saw that, even on the cutting room floor, you had an obligation as a news organization, if Fox wants to be called that, and they usually don't, especially when they're in court, you had an obligation, just a baseline moral obligation, to not have that kind of person on your air. You don't have serial killers on cooking shows, for fuck's sake. You don't have people who abuse children or batter women on shows about advice for how you run your family. This is the kind of thing where there should be a base moral understanding that when you find someone who expresses these opinions, you're not stifling their free speech when you cut them off. You're cleaning up the rest of the world. You're protecting yourself from the grotesque moral pollution that kind of belief set reflects. So people who have empowered Kanye, and frankly, you too, Kanye, get your shit together. You're on the enemy's list. Thanks for listening to The Enemies List. If you have any questions or comments, you can hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Of course, I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, and every other possible podcast format in the world, including people who strap USB memory sticks to the legs of pigeons and fly them around the city. And I'd also really appreciate it if you'd like and share this podcast and review it. That really helps. We're trying to grow it. This is our second episode, and we're really looking forward to reaching many more people. The response so far has been amazing, and I'm so honored. But we look forward to growing our podcast family here as we talk about the rest of the 2022 election cycle and beyond. And don't forget, stay off the list.